She was my everything. Lucy saved me over and over and over again.
Welcome to Rescued by a Dog, the podcast that brings you stories that the world needs about how our dogs are always the best things in our lives, even when the world is heavy. These are stories about dogs who have actually saved their owners' lives. I'm Laura, a mom to two amazing rescue dogs and author of the novel Not Just a Dog. And today I'm bringing you the heartwarming story of Lucy, who helped her loving owner Deidre get through cancer treatments. Our sponsor today is an amazing organization called Together for Health. Founded and led by a team of dog lovers, Together for Health works to prevent cervical cancer in the United States and around the world. You can learn more about them and how you can support at togetherforhealth.org. Now for Deidre's story about the steadfast power of a dog's love. Hi.
Hi.
You and I met one time, a long time ago, and I reached out to you because I knew a little bit about your story, and I'm grateful that you are willing to tell it on this podcast.
I'm excited about it. It's something that's on my mind a lot.
I'm sure it is. Why don't you start by telling me about your dog? Who was your dog and where did you meet your dog?
All right. Well, her name was Lucy, and she was a purebred tri-colored beagle, the black, brown, and white, which I didn't know until like the end of her days when we got the results from a genetic test. She was a purebred beagle, which I always knew in my heart anyway. But so she weighed about 30 pounds, and she was perfect to me in every way. But we encountered some very rude humans throughout her lifetime that pretty much called her fat. And, one time one lady said, "She doesn't miss any meals, does she?" And it's like she's my child. You know, I don't have human children, so like, you're calling my child fat. Yeah, all the meals. So,
and how did you meet Lucy?
Okay, so I was at the time I was the director for the Young Lawyers Division at the State Bar of Georgia, and so I was in Atlanta. This was 2005. My parents had a little beagle named Fred, and I had just fallen in love with him. And I thought, okay, I'm ready. I never had, you know, my own dog. I had my own hamster, and we had had family dogs and cats and all that. Yep. So there was a little beagle at the Athens Clark County shelter, and you know, we don't really know a lot of her history, but they say that she was stray and she was, you know, emaciated. She would flinch at anything. So they said, "Well, do you want to come meet her?" And I was like, "Can I just come get her?" And they said, "Well, you need to make sure it's a good fit, personality wise, and she has to be spayed." So I went up, and oh my goodness, they had these little outdoor, like, I guess fences, but they were cages. So she was in one of them, and they let her out. Oh my goodness, she was the sweetest thing, and she just kind of latched on to me.
Aww.
Like, I did not want to leave her, but the next day I got to pick up Lucy.
Nice.
And she was very timid, fearful, but she came to me and seemed to trust me. She was just afraid of a lot of people, although she came to love many people throughout her life, like my family. And now she loved other dogs. She wanted to be with other dogs, you know, anybody. And my family have three rescues. she had five brothers or sisters or cousins or however you want to, we called them her brothers. So, she had a broken tail. It never healed. It was kind of a crooked little tail. And,
do you know what that came? Did they have any idea what caused that?
No. Okay. So in my head, she was owned by someone that wanted her to be a hunting dog. Ah. And she refused because she was not going to kill other animals. And
I like that story.
That's what I always say is she just refused to be a hunting dog. And so, and she never barked. She was, you know, for a beagle, that's just what they do. They howl. And she didn't do that. She was very quiet and very timid and just the sweetest thing. So I had a hotel room that for that weekend, and I went and picked her up. And so she went back to the hotel. She was, you know, very drowsy, and I curled up in a little ball and slept on the bed. I just felt like that night was very much a bonding experience. So, you know, I'm new at all of this. I just didn't know what I was doing. I get a bowl and a collar, you know, all the stuff they tell you to get, but it's different once they're there in front of you. You know, for both of us, it was such a smooth transition that I couldn't have asked for anything better. Sometimes I would think, you know, that could have been really bad, a bad situation. Yeah, a beagle. I didn't know that she didn't howl, which they had told me she was quiet, but, you know, I was living in an apartment in Atlanta that howling would not have been acceptable. I was very, very anxious with her. Like, I loved her so much that I was very anxious that something was going to happen, that she was going to get out. And, you know, with beagles, they catch a scent and they're off, and then they catch another scent and they're off. And there are so many beagles that are runaways because they can't find their way back home a lot of the time. Because they have such a great, you know, nose. And so I was terrified that was going to happen. I was out of love, but I also wish that I was a little bit more easygoing. Like, I had to be around her, you know, I had to see what she was doing and when she went outside. And
did she want to be near you too?
She did. She did. She was always, always near me, right beside me. She, you know, of course she slept in the bed. That's not even something, of course she did. There were like two times that I needed to board her. And when I picked her up, she was so mad at me. Well, she, you know, jumps up and runs and like, "Oh, I'm so excited you're here. Thank you for coming back." But then, like, in the car, she turned her head to the side away from me the whole drive. And I was like, she is mad at me. And she did it a couple, you know, the other time she was boarded too. And it
was it like all day?
A few hours. And I think she would forget that she was mad. And, you know, I would pet her or something and she would react and then turn her head back around. And just like, I don't blame you, okay? I wouldn't want to, you know, I was in Paris, you were in the cage, sorry.
So when she was a little bit older, you went through a pretty difficult time in your life. What happened in your life?
Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer on October 27th of 2017. And anybody hearing you have cancer, I mean, it just changes. You know, it's a shocker. And I remember just hugging her after it was a phone call. And so in my bedroom. That's what they do now a lot of times.
I didn't know they did that over the phone.
Oh yeah. So, you know, I just snuggled her and I didn't cry. I was, I guess maybe just too in shock, but going through treatment, the type of cancer that I had was It's triple negative. And
what does that mean?
It's rare and it's aggressive. So there are not many different ways to treat it. Like if you have an estrogen positive receptor, like mine was triple negative, so all three were negative. Sometimes people have a positive and a negative and another positive. So if you have the positive receptor, there are so many new treatments. Like you've probably heard of people taking a pill, you know, every day for 5 or 10 years or some the rest of their life. There's nothing like that for triple negative because it's estrogen. I can't have anything with estrogen basically. And so the chemo was just awful. For me, my hair was very, very important. And you see this brown hair here. I always had blonde hair before. So I was supposed to do 12 rounds of Taxol and then 4 rounds of AC, which is known as the Red Devil. And so the first 3 Taxol, it worked. But then they did an MRI and my tumor was still growing. So they said, we're going to stop that and go ahead and do the AC. And one treatment, and it was like 15 days to the day when I lost it all.
Wow.
Yeah. I went skydiving after that. I, you know, tried to do things that would be uplifting, I guess. But right after skydiving is when it pretty much all fell out. So,
Lucy doing so far? Like, was she aware that you were sick?
Okay. So I'm sure she was, because I was sleeping. So I was so tired and things were just different, with me, like even some cognitive things that I noticed. And you know, I wonder what she thought about me being bald. Like I always had, you know, the longest hair and it's bright, you know, it was a very light color. I didn't have eyebrows or eyelashes. So I looked very sick. You know, at this time she's getting sick, not sick. She's getting, she's just not doing well. And
health-wise,
yes. And she had a torn ACL that they weren't going to do anything with. I mean, she was 15 at this time, or she was 14, and we had been together now 13 years. Well, 12 years at this point. And so her mobility was extremely affected. It got to where she was sliding around on the wood floors. You know, she would stand up and then like all of her legs, you know, all four would just go out. Like it was so sad. So I got these little boots for her, which looked adorable on, but she was just like, why am I wearing boots? But, and at this point though, so we live upstairs. At this point, I'm having to carry her down the stairs. There's 16 stairs and, you know, every time to go outside. And,
and you were sick too.
And I was sick. So carrying her, like, you know, with surgery and with, you know, the tumor, and my right shoulder, just like as soon as chemo started, my right shoulder just started bothering me. Like, I have no idea why. And it's still bad. So, you know, I've got right arm, no good, left arm, no good, but I always did it. And yeah, we were happy to, I was happy to do that and honored. The day that I had surgery, I was going to stay downstairs and I was in so much pain, and just miserable. And I, you know, she was very, kind. She would, you know, come up and lick, just gently lick my hand. But a couple of days later, I was hospitalized after the surgery, and she was just laying. It was just so precious. There's nothing in that bedroom. There's nothing, you know, no other dogs. It's just like she's just there on the floor by herself, just waiting, because she knew I was coming back to that bed, that bedroom. Oh. And
she waited in that bedroom for you?
Yes. Yes. And you know, and being in the hospital, I just longed for her. And so this guy, or this girl, is a stuffed beagle, but very realistic looking at times. So my friend in Atlanta, my best friend Tiffany, had sent me that during chemo, because I was just like, I'm so sad that I can't bring Lucy anywhere with me. So
that's a good bestie.
She sent that. Oh, it was. So I carried it from then on. I always carried it with me, and it brought so much joy to people. Just walking through the hospital, I got stopped by people, and it was just amazing. And that was one thing that was very uplifting to me during that time, is, you know, just walking through and it was like a celebrity, like I was carrying a celebrity, and it, people, you know, made them smile and they wanted to kind of pet it. So, so I did have her, and she stayed, I call her little Lucy. So when I was in the hospital, she was right there in the bed beside me.
You know, I don't understand why there aren't hospitals where you can bring your dogs. I honestly think people would heal quicker.
It is. I do think 100% I do too. And that, you know, that's what, like when I'm in the hospital and I'm missing her and thinking like, what is she doing? Or my parents, you know, taking her out when she needs to go out. And I just think, you know, if I could have just even for a minute, just hugged her, if they could have brought her up to see me, like how much difference would that have made?
Huge difference.
So,
you know,
yeah,
like chemically it makes a difference, right? Like there's a scientist out at Duke who did a study that showed that when a dog and their human looks, that when they look at each other, they're actually releasing endorphins in their brain. So it's like this happiness feedback loop between a dog and their person. And you needed that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So what was her reaction then when you got home?
She was always so happy to see me, no matter how much pain she was in or, you know, had trouble walking. She was making it over to me, even if she was almost swimming on the hardwood floor to do it. And precious, you know, just, she would kind of cry when I walked in, just like, you know, I can't believe I've been, you know, I'm so glad you're here. I can't believe you left me. Don't ever do it again. And just very, you know, affectionate. And which, you know, when you have a dog and you work or you go anywhere and you come home and it shows that excitement and that unconditional love, that's one of the greatest feelings of having a dog, is, you know, when you get back and see them. When I wrote notes about all this, I have written down, Lucy saved me over and over and over again. It, you know, it was always the two of us, and it was up to me to make sure all her needs were met. So changes in my life with her, you know, becoming responsible for another living creature. I've always struggled with depression since college, and you know, they say one of the best things for a depressed person is, you know, holding and hugging a dog. And so I, you know, I had that, I had more than a hug and a hold. I had her all the time. And there were periods that I would, you know, be more depressed than others. And I feel like just the physical, being able to put my arms around her and her, like, scoot her butt closer to me, and you know, she would scoot so like hard, and like she didn't want there to be a single bit of space between us. And you know, it's that it just gives you a different sense of purpose than before. We did a lot of napping, and
about a 15-year-old yes. dog liked all the napping.
Exactly. Yes. And I had always said that I wanted the two of us to go together. And then I got a cancer diagnosis and her health is failing. And that seemed like a possibility, you know. She was my everything. Like, it was intense, and you know, I didn't want to picture life without her.
Yeah.
So, you know, my treatment ended on August 28th. That I had, you know, 30 days of radiation, and we had to say goodbye at the end of November. Oh. So I, you know, she waited until I was finished with treatment. And I think that she had to know. I mean, she was not doing so well herself. And so again, I think we were taking care of each other. You know, we're both sick and we're both giving that love that is needed and desired and so helpful. And I think, you know, that was the last gift from her.
When you were carrying Lucy down the stairs every day to go to the bathroom, you said you were honored to do that, which really also yes. choked me up because you were in so much pain at the time too. But I was thinking, I feel like our dogs tell us that they are honored to be there for us too. Like, I think she yes. was honored to be the one that was there for you in your hardest mm-hmm. time. That probably filled her with meaning, just like her being with you filled you with meaning.
Her purpose. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe you've already touched on this, but what is a particularly happy memory that you have with Lucy?
So every like Christmas Day through New Year's Day, my family and my extended family would rent a cabin or two cabins in the mountains. And they had to get a dog friendly cabin because I'm not going if Lucy's not going. So,
respect.
Every year we went, and I have such good memory. I love Christmas. It's my favorite time of year.
Me too.
You know, I always took that week off of work and just, it was a special time. And then walking her around those areas, she was just in heaven. All the different smells and, you know, all the different wildlife that I'm sure had left there, you know, marked the territory, and just seeing her explore and have fun like that. I think it was harder for her to wag her tail as much since it was broken, but she would, like, sometimes it would get to going so fast, you couldn't even see that a tail was there. Like, it was just like this, you know, this motion. And just, you know, of course she's on the leash. So she is just pulling me, you know, as hard as she can, trying to get to different smells.
If Lucy could understand English, what would you say to her?
Okay. So I would tell her that I love her more than imaginable. It's not measurable. It's in chemo brain. Goes to infinity and back.
Infinite?
That word right now. Infinite. Yes. But, and that she was the best dog. Now, what's kind of funny about this is I feel like in a way I have told her, dog communicators or animal communicators. Do you know?
Okay. I know all about this. Yep.
Okay. Some people just, And I've never like been to a psychic. I finally said, I want to do it. So this woman, it's just so bizarre. You know, she's saying, I'm seeing Lucy on this, you know, rectangular, like bed, and it's, you know, brown. And like, that was the first bed that I ever got for her, which is still in my room with the big hole in the center. But, it gave me more comfort than anything. And, you know, she said, she's saying you need to drink more water. Well, I had just gone through treatment. I don't like water. I'm like, my sister said, that's like not liking air. So I drink a lot of Cokes.
Ah.
And all, you know, everybody had something to say about that. You know, all of my doctors, you need to drink more water. You need to drink more water. But this woman, all I had done was we texted her a picture of Lucy. And like I said, I wasn't planning on doing the call. And so she said, you need to drink more water. And that was just like that, you know. And the other thing she said is, you have so much love in you that you need to give away. And that I needed to get another dog. And I said, I will not get another dog. That's not an option. And she stressed that a few times, like, you need that. You need to give love to somebody. And the things that she said were comforting. There were just some very specific things that were so odd that I felt like we were communicating.
And so did you take her advice to get another dog?
Okay. So in my head, I, you know, I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to get another dog. If I ever do, it's going to be a beagle again. So my mother especially is such a foster failure with dogs. It's a good way to be a failure. So she brings this little long-haired Chihuahua home. And I thought, when she told me Chihuahua, I'm just like, it's just not who I am. That's not me. This little guy comes in and is the cutest thing in the world. He has been through he's been through a lot. And I just held him and hugged him. And I said, well, he can sleep with me in my bed tonight. And he never left. He never left. I didn't want him to think he was a replacement. And, you know, in the same way, still honor her, but she totally wanted me to love, you know, give that away. I was always her person, and I think she had a huge amount of trust in me that I would provide for her and do what was right for her. I think she knew from the beginning. And I think I knew from the beginning when I saw her and she was dirty, and you know, I only got to spend a few minutes with her, but I just knew, like, we're together. You know, this is us. We're a couple.